Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Ann Leary. Hello, Ann.
Hey, Vic. How are you?
Much better now, thank you.
Better than
I was what? Before we got you on the phone.
Oh, how fabulous. Okay, good.
You've got a new novel out, and by gosh, this thing is starting to get some attention. I think I read an article about you in the New York Times the other day, didn't I?
You did. It was the Sunday Times. It was great. Great little, what did they call it? A feature about my book.
That was very cool.
Very exciting.
It's a picture of you on the bed with your dog.
Yeah, I had second thoughts after allowing the photographer to come up into my little attic workplace, which is a bed in an attic.
So you write in bed?
Yeah, I write in bed. I do everything in bed, pretty much. I mean, when I'm not, I tend to do a lot of things outdoors. And when I'm in the house, I like to be in my bed because, actually, that bed isn't the bed I sleep in with my husband. That's the bed where I write. And the reason that they're not the same place is because even though in the New York Times it looked really tidy, normally there's four dogs and a lot of food and spilled coffee, and it's more of a Grey Gardens kind of look than that. So, but I like to be in a kind of semi-prone position when I'm writing for some reason, just kind of lying instead of sitting. I don't know why.
So you do a lot of stuff outside, so you probably have beds set up out in the yard various
places. I know.
Places.
I should have a series of beds that I can like spring from one to the other, to the car, and then a bed in the back of the car.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You live in Connecticut, don't you?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. Well, this new book is set in Massachusetts, but I get the sense that this community is maybe a little bit like communities that you're accustomed to in Connecticut.
Well, you know, it actually is a little like we do live in a very small town in northwestern Connecticut. I think when people hear Connecticut, they often think of maybe Greenwich and these kind of very ritzy suburbs. But where we live, it's still very rural and it's very small town. I think the population of our town is around 2,000. And I did draw on, the community where we live now because we've lived there for about 15 years, but also we lived in Marblehead, Massachusetts, which is on the North Shore of Boston when I was a teenager, and that is the area where this novel is set, on the North Shore. It's set in a town called Wendover, which isn't a real town. It's supposed to be like Ipswich or Essex, and that's near Marblehead and Salem. So
it sounds like a real town, and I mean the name. It sounds like a town you'd find. And
right, I did. It's so hard to come up with a New England town name because they're all they have to be English names because it's weird. In New York, the names of the areas tend to be more Dutch, but in the Massachusetts and North, it's more everything's Manchester, Wendover, Andover. Anyway, came up with Wendover, but it's not a real town. Okay. I made it up.
Well, it's very believable. The book is The Good House, and your main character, she sells real estate. And
right.
I'm wondering how you came up with her. This is an intriguing creation.
Well, one thing is I'm kind of obsessed with real estate. And if I'm very stressed out, which I often am, I tend to go online and look at real estate, like people look at porn. It's just so soothing to me. I don't really, and it's exactly how people look at porn. I don't really want to go there and be involved in the real estate. I just want to look at it. And then maybe fantasize about being, what it would be like to live in these places. And I'm not talking about really grand places. Like, I just like to look at places where people live and think about what it would be like to live there. But having said that, we moved around a lot growing up, mostly in the Midwest, and we ended up in Marblehead when I was 14. And the town of Marblehead is this very historic seaside town that has a lot of character, and a lot of my friends had grown up there, as had their parents and grandparents, and I was friends with people who there were parts of the town named after them. There were, streets and coves named with their last names because their ancestors came in the 1600s and they still are there. So that has always intrigued me, the idea that the towny thing. And I, when I moved there at 14 and feeling very insecure, thought, you know, I kind of envied them, their sense of belonging to this place, and thought I would have loved to have been, you know, a townie or from a place. And I thought I'd feel more like I belonged, although I know from all my friends that did grow up in small towns, they didn't feel that way. To a kid, it seemed like that. So to get back to your question, that this town is a little bit like Marblehead. It's a little bit like the town where I live, but... But wait, that wasn't your question, was it? It was about Hildy. Good. The real estate broker, right?
You got it.
Okay. You can edit out.
That's
you can
okay.
edit this, right?
No,
okay.
This is fine.
Okay. So we have lived in our house in our little town in Connecticut for about 15 years, and we are probably never going to move. But a few years ago, a house did come on the market near ours that we were interested in. It was in terrible shape. I thought it might be fun to buy it and fix it up and maybe sell it. So I did a walkthrough with a contractor that we know just to see if he thought it was worth, you know, trying to salvage this house. And when we came out for air, and I knew these people just because they live in my community, they weren't there at the time. But, you know, because they had been kind of animal hoarders, the place was really in bad shape. We had to keep going out to get fresh air. And at some point, I said to the contractor, what do you think is wrong with these people? Because that's, you know, the place is in such bad shape. And before he didn't even have to pause, he said, oh, they're alcoholics. And I said, oh, do you know them? And he said, no, but I've been doing this for 30 years, and I can walk through a house once and tell you more about the people who live in it than a psychiatrist could after a year of sessions. And that really fascinated me. It became the first sentence in my book, and it's Hildy Good who says it. She's a real estate broker in this small town, and she knows a lot about the people in her town, not only because she descends from its earliest settlers, she's a real townie, but she's a really successful real estate broker. So she is good at walking through a person's house and kind of assessing the person by what she sees rather than what they are saying about themselves.
And she's a strong woman. She's an independent woman. She's a divorcee. Her kids are gone. Her daughter's grown up and moved away. And she's the number one real estate agent in her area. And she's very proud of that. But she feels a little resentment about some things, like the woman that she kind of trained that's gone on to work for Sotheby's.
Right.
Is taking away some of her trade. And she's feeling a little insecurity, isn't she?
Well, she is, because she has a few problems that we learn about early on in the book. She was the number one real estate agent, but now these corporate real estate firms, Sotheby's, Coldwell Banker, Ravis, are kind of pushing out her little small business. And that's one of the themes of this book, is how small town businesses are having a hard time competing with chains, and she's having a hard time. It's set in the present day, so the real estate market isn't doing so as well as it was. That's one of her problems. And another problem is that her grown daughters think she has a drinking problem, and they staged an intervention and sent her off to Hazelden when she certainly doesn't think she has a drinking problem. She's very successful, and so, you know, she's a little angry about that. So those are a couple of the things that she's grappling with when we meet her in the book at the beginning.
Well, when they do an intervention like that, doesn't the person who's being intervened have to want to go along with the program?
Right. Well, yeah, I think so. And I think that people tend to think, because I think there's these reality shows about interventions, and people think the person always breaks down and says, yes, I want help. But in truth, I only know a little bit about this firsthand, because I have had my own struggles with alcoholism, and know a lot of people who have recovered from or are in recovery from alcoholism, that sometimes, you know, I know people who believe that the intervention that their family and friends had for them saved their lives. Many times it doesn't. It doesn't work out very well. A person goes off to rehab really angry because, you know, I think it only works if the intervention actually coincides with the alcoholic's own, like, waning denial.
Mm.
And if that happens, then it works. But if the alcoholic is not at all, there's no chink in that denial, that, you know, big wall of denial, they are shocked and feel quite betrayed. And the denial for an alcoholic is almost like it's like a blanket of, you know, that keeps them kind of covered and warm. And if you just rip it off before they're ready to have it removed, you leave them very vulnerable and ashamed. And that's where Hildy is, you know, when we find her in the book.
Ann Leary joins us. Her new novel is The Good House. And there's some serious issues and topics in this book, but there's also a lot of whimsy. And for me as a reader, a lot of it involved a guy named Frankie Getchell. And I love the scene where Hildy, she likes to have a few drinks by herself in the evening. And on a warm summer night after she's had a few, she likes to go out and do a little skinny dipping.
Right.
And she's right there by the water. And the next day she runs into Frankie Getchell, who was her first love. And now he's like the community garbage collector.
Right.
And she runs into Frankie. He's like, yeah, I saw you last night.
Right. Right. Well, that's the, you know, Hildy is, when she's sober, you know, quite, she's got kind of a wry sense of humor, but she doesn't suffer fools gladly. And she certainly doesn't want to be seen as foolish herself. And so, you know, but she tends to often not remember things that she did when she was drinking. So, you know, that's part of, you know, the alcoholic, you know, the plight of the alcoholic. And at that point in the book too, I really, this book is told from Hildy's point of view. And my challenge as the writer was to, you know, was to tell the story of an alcoholic in denial from the alcoholic's point of view. And I really hope the reader, and now this, I guess, is a spoiler, I really wanted the reader for a while to believe Hildy and to feel that her meddlesome daughters really should mind their own business, because, you know, she really was doing fine, you know. And but then, you know, there's embarrassing things like Frank Getchell saw her running, you know, she's 60 years old, running naked into her, you know, to the ocean when she thought nobody was watching. There were, I think, some very humorous parts of the book. And unfortunately, a couple of the early reviews or the blurbs on the book said that they thought the book was funny. And then there was there were commenters on, you know, when people write reviews on things, that were outraged that the book wasn't funny at all. It was about a very serious subject, alcoholism. And it's like, well, no, it's not supposed to be a comedy book. But like,
yeah.
I think, you know, there's always something funny that, you know, no matter what you're struggling with, there's always, in my mind, humor.
Those sound like some Amazon reviews. I didn't go and look, but a lot of times I get the impression when you see a review where they give you a little lead on, like, oh, it's a comic farce or whatever, sometimes I think, well, you know, they only read half the book.
Right. Right.
I just think it's lazy reviewing. That's my own personal opinion. Ann Leary joins us. Her new novel is The Good House. Yeah, there's some serious stuff in here. She's got a real estate office, and right next to her office is an office of a guy who's is he a psychiatrist, psychologist?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And this guy has a long history with her.
Right.
And he's a very serious part of this story. Also, we've got this beautiful young woman who's married to the really rich guy, and she's got all these horses, and Hildy got him this house, and Rebecca is like another really interesting character.
Right. Well, so, yeah, Rebecca, you know, as I said, one of the themes is, you know, the small town and how they tend to be changing. And so Hildy makes her money selling these properties that belonged to people she's known most of her life, to wealthy hedge funders, people from the city who are drawn to the town because of its quaint charm. But then they often tend to, you know, then the charm starts to go away because they build McMansions where there was a little, you know, salt box house, and they want their Starbucks and stuff. So that's one of the themes too of the book is, you know, how, you know, Hildy does make her living doing this, but on the other hand, it's a little sad that, you know, her town is changing, but she's quite enthralled with Rebecca. Rebecca is very exotic. She comes from a very kind of very blue blood, you know, wealthy family, and she's married to a kind of a new money rich hedge funder. And so Rebecca and Peter, the psychiatrist, originally the book was about them. I I read about a scandal, a true scandal that happened in the Boston area involving a psychiatrist and a patient and having an affair. And it was an interesting story. I thought it would make a great novel. I wanted to set it in a small town. I knew I wanted to write this book set in New England. And I started writing this years ago. And Hildy was just a peripheral character. And then I really felt that I knew Hildy better than I knew any of the other characters. Like, I really understood Hildy. I've known a lot of women quite like her, and I feel that there's a little Hildy in me. And so eventually I decided to make her the narrator. I guess when that contractor said that great line, I thought, you know what, this is a great kind of perspective to have a narrator, you know, have this, you know, I can walk through a house and know about it, you know, sense of knowledge of the place. So, Hildy is quite enthralled with Rebecca, and but originally, you know, the story was about the psychiatrist and his patient, and now it's just that's just a subplot because the book is really about Hildy and her own kind of relationship with her town, with this old love of hers, but ultimately, I guess, her relationship with the truth about herself. I'm not sure if that's what you asked.
That's okay. So Hildy took over. Hildy said,
really
this is
took
my
over the,
story.
She hijacked the book. Yeah, she totally hijacked the book. Because once I made her the narrator, when I'd sit down to write about Rebecca and Peter, she kept interjecting with stories about her childhood and, you know, how explaining she doesn't really have a drinking problem. And I just found her the more compelling character. But I do think the character of Peter is compelling. His office is upstairs from Hildy's. It's in the old parish house of the church. In any New England town, there's at least two or three churches. There, the center of the town is usually, you know, where the churches were or are. Not many people go to church anymore. And in a lot of small New England towns, the parish houses are now homes or businesses. And so he does therapy in an office where at one time a minister in, you know, probably colonial times did maybe the same thing. And that was another kind of theme I had where I do think in present society, we turn to psychiatry the way once people turn to religion. And I felt too that the whole, you know, it's illegal for a psychiatrist to have a romantic relationship with their patient. And I didn't know that until I read about this scandal. And to me, that was surprising that in this day and age, it's illegal for any consenting adults to have sexual relations. It seemed very puritanical. And I wondered why the psychiatrist is almost given like this kind of magical, you know, kind of status where, you know, they're almost considered not mortal. You're not allowed to have relations with the patient. So that was kind of intriguing to me, and that is still part of the story.
Well, they're kind of like priests. You're not supposed to have relations with them either.
Well, they're not supposed to have the priests. I'm Catholic, so priests aren't supposed to have, they're married to God.
Right.
and but I think I you can up, have relationships with ministers or
I came
if
up through
to them.
Parochial schools myself, and I can remember the nuns always had the gold wedding band.
Married to Jesus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See,
there
you go. The book is The Good House. Ann Leary wrote it. You are a keen observer. I can picture you at the party or walking down the street and just watching, just listening.
You know, I do like to, one great thing about writing, especially writing fiction, is aspects of your personality that some might consider flaws. Like, for example, I'm a little bit nosy. I like to know everybody's business. I get to say, it's because I'm a writer. I study characters. But I'm actually just incredibly nosy and do like to know everybody's business. And then another one is that if I hear a story, I want to tell it. And I'm, you know, some might call me a gossip, but I actually like to embellish. If I hear a good story, I'm known to maybe amp it up a little, embellish it up into a really great story. And so I'm considered maybe not the most reliable person to go to for information about others. But I warn people, you know, I'm a big mouth, you know. And so I think that is something, fortunately, that works for me as a writer, that I do like to study people. I do love to hear a great story, and then I like to make it better and change it, and that way people aren't mad. So when if it does end up in a book, they don't know it's them. And none of my characters are really based on any real people, but are often composites of people I've known.
We're on the radio right now, and I hear that you are a hashtag and that you do a radio show with one of my favorite people, Julie Clam.
Oh, I do. It's with Julie Clam and Laura Zigman. And so I'm usually you doing, we're you, and then talking to other people. We're going to have you on our show now. Yeah, that'll be what we'll do. We're kind of on hiatus right now because we all have different things going on. But we are involved with this little NPR station up in northwestern Connecticut, WHDD, Robin Hood Radio. And we do a show like yours. We interview authors. But there are four of us talking at the same time. I'm at the station. Julie's in Boston, and Julie's in New York, and Laura is in Boston. They are tuning in via Skype, and then we have an author on the phone, like I am. So it's usually four people, and amazingly, we don't all talk over each other, and it ends up being a really fun conversation. And we've had some really great authors and really fun shows. We really love doing it.
I've listened, and I've noticed. You have a propensity for having cute guys on the program.
We love to have guys. We don't have enough guys, so that's what we're going to have you on.
Because
we always, we do this thing, we realize, where we get all giggly and silly when there's a guy on, even though we're not schoolgirls anymore. Mm-hmm. It changes the energy a little bit, but we often, we've had some really great guests on the show, and if anyone wants to listen to the show, they can go on www.hashtags.com, and we have all the shows there, and you can just listen to them for free as a podcast.
And you are so prescient with your name, Hashtags, because I think the most recognized word last year was hashtags, and all three of you are big Twitterati.
Yeah, we met. That's the thing is, we all met. We're best friends now, but we met on Twitter, and it's almost like it's a little embarrassing. It's like saying you met your husband at a bar or on, you know, I guess it's kind of like meeting somebody on computer dating or something. That's how we met. But we became very good friends very fast. And, we decided, you know, and that we also thought we would have guests on the show, not just authors, but maybe people who are, writing or somehow involved in things that are trending topics today that people, for example, might have a hashtag attached to. So we're hashtags.
That's a great name.
Yeah, we love it. We have so much fun doing it. It's really great.
Ann Leary joins us. Her new novel is The Good House. And I think my favorite character in the book is Frankie.
Yeah, he's mine, too. I really like Frankie. The interesting story about Frank is when I finished writing this book, I sent a draft to my sister who lives in Massachusetts in Marblehead. And I gave one to my friend who lives in the town where I live. And they both called afterwards and said, oh, you know, I think the book's great. But my sister said, I think you should change the specifics about, you know, how Frank looks and his job and everything. And she named this guy who lives in our town that I went to high school with, who looks exactly like Frank Getchell and has his job now that I didn't even know that's what this guy did now. And I said, oh, I didn't know. And then Jane called and said, who lives in my town, said, you know, you need to change the specifics about Frank Getchell. And she named a guy that lives in our town who actually is a little bit like Frank, and I could see people. And then I said, you know what, that just convinces me that any good little town has the Frank Getchell. And Frank is, you know, he's another townie. He descends from one of the oldest families in the town. He looks like a hermit. He lives in this little house. The grounds are covered with debris that he's taken home from construction sites. He's a real New England Yankee. He doesn't like anything new. He doesn't like to waste money, but he looks very poor, but he's actually, you know, quite wealthy. He has a lot of land in the town that's just been handed down over the years. He just doesn't want to sell it. He wants to fish off the land or just, you know, own it. So he's a guy who really is content with what he has. He's very steadfast. He's kind of a solid guy. And he loves Hildy for who she is and values her. He values he puts a different value on things than many people do. He doesn't, for example, you know, his land is worth millions of dollars. It's on the water, but millions of dollars doesn't need that. He really needs a place to fish, and that's kind of who he is. And there are people like him that I know that I really admire. And he doesn't want, he's also like Hildy. They're both kind of these New England characters who care very much about their community, and they do quietly help others, but they would not want anyone to know that they do that. They don't want attention for any kind of good things they do. they like to be seen as kind of these crusty old cranky people, but they're not. They actually really do a lot for their neighbors and care a lot.
There's one in every community. They look like they're homeless or bag lady or the crazy cat lady or whatever, and it's like they die and they gave $10 million to Johns Hopkins.
Right.
In their will, yeah.
And I love that. I love that because, what is, for some people, just, you know, they don't, believe it or not, you know, a lot of people don't want a fancy car. They really want to just live their life the way they were. And so that's who Frank is.
And he's got a heart of gold.
He does. He does. But, he's not... he doesn't talk a lot, quiet. Yeah. He's just a quiet, he's not particularly attractive, but he's got this kind of quiet nobility that I think I see a lot in my community. And I think probably that exists in every community, even in the city, so you'll find the people like this in your neighborhood who, no one in this book is a big, kind of larger than life hero, but I think, and no one is a villain. It's kind of, I wanted to make it like a real town where there's people who try and, some people are better than others. And, sometimes there's a huge scandal and a crisis and then it's over, hopefully, and things work out.
My guest has been Ann Leary. Her new novel is The Good House, and we're out of time, but I hear a rumor this might be made into a major motion picture.
Well, it would be great if it was. It has been optioned, but as you probably know, many books are optioned, and nothing happens. So we will see. It would be great.
Well, good luck with that.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me on your show. This has been so much fun.
Been a pleasure.
You've been
listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. They were one of the most influential bands of the early 1980s. They weren't together for very long. It ended in tragedy. They were called Joy Division. Next week, we'll talk to founding member Peter Hook, the bassist for the band. His memoir, Unknown Pleasures, Inside Joy Division. Right here in the Book Nook on WYSO. Joy Division. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.